Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Suhan, brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort. Jim getting set to attend the Timberwolves practice here in a little bit after we're speaking here. Do you go to Wolves practice as much, or is it kind of because they're into the playoffs?
I go more in the playoffs. I go periodically during the regular season. You know, you get to watch a little bit of them just shooting around at the end of practice. You don't watch any strategical stuff, and then you usually get to talk to the coach and a couple of players. A lot of times, mid-season, you know, that stuff just doesn't have enough high impact for me to spend a lot of time with it. Sometimes I'll just drop by to say hello to some people.
Yeah.
But playoffs, now, you don't know how much access you're going to get, and everything is more meaningful.
It's kind of just, you know, keeping relationships then.
Yeah. Yeah, and showing your face. And honestly, so often what happens for local media, you know, beat writers especially, but also columnists, is sometimes you get your best stuff just in the casual conversations that aren't interviews. When I go over to the Twins, 90% of the good stuff I get is like just somebody pulling me aside and saying, hey, did you know this? Or hey, did you notice this? Or hey, you might want to ask this guy this. Uh-huh. And those are things you don't get unless you're there in person.
So it's, a little bit of fact-finding for the most part, just kind of being around him a little bit. I'll be interested to ask you tomorrow if you see Chris Finch, although, no, you won't see him today, will you? He's having surgery, I think.
He's having surgery today, so I'm guessing we'll be talking to Mike and Nori today. And the real question is, can Finch be anywhere on the sideline? If he's second row and they have him kind of protected and he can talk to Nori as Nori's right in front of him on the sideline, I just don't think much changes. If he can't be anywhere near the court for safety reasons, then it'll be different. Nori's very capable, but still not quite the same as, you don't want to really alter your routine in the second round playoff series against the defending champs.
Yeah. I know it's happened before, but I can't think of an NBA instance. I remember near the end of Joe Paterno's tenure at Penn State, he got run over and had to coach from the press box for several weeks because of a broken leg. So it's happened, but it seems more inconvenient for basketball almost.
Yeah, because football, it's really, there are so many coaches and there's such open lines of communication. You have so much time between plays. There's so many timeouts. Football, 95% of a football game is people standing around waiting for something, the next thing to happen.
Yeah.
You know, there's time to communicate. Basketball, the head coach, wants to be able to respond instantaneously to things he sees. And he might call a timeout. He's standing on the sideline. He sees something nobody else might have seen. I don't want to overplay it. It's really more of a comfort thing than anything else. I think if they went through the season and Finch sat in the second row and Mike and Nori ran the thing from the sideline, they probably would have ended up in the same place. But it's more of an odd feeling, discomfort thing than anything else.
The Sixers managed to beat the Knicks and continue that series, even with Joel Embiid kind of playing on one leg. I'm hearing a lot about Embiid being a 7'2" shooting guard out there. It's in part because of his leg now. He's just not able to drive the ball that well. But he does spend a lot of time on the perimeter. That makes me appreciate Cat, who will go on the block when needed and can still come out top.
Well, I would say when Embiid is fully healthy, he can be in from anywhere. He is such a good shooter, such a good mid-range shooter, so good off the bounce that, he usually is better off clearing himself for a shot and getting the open shot than he is going all the way to the rim and maybe attracting a double team. But he can do everything when he's healthy. Right now, he's just trying to limit the stress on that leg, and he's just taking almost standstill shots that aren't that effective. Last night, the story was really two things. Tyrese Maxey goes bonkers at the end of the game, pulls a Reggie Miller, and the Knicks really botched, the strategy of when and who to foul to prevent that kind of a comeback.
Yeah, there was some screaming about foul him, and he got the three off, and it was a deep three. He knows that's the strategy, too. As soon as he saw a little freedom, he jacked it up from 30 feet.
Yes, and of course ESPN, the network of overreaction, started talking about whether he's going to be the next face of the NBA. I thought it was going to be Anthony Edwards or Victor Wembanyama. It's like every 5 minutes we have a new face of the NBA. You know what that means?
Yeah.
None of these guys are the face of the NBA.
Yeah,
if you have to argue about it, then that person isn't it.
That's right. We don't have them just yet.
No.
That's right. So the Twins pick up win number 9 in a row, longest streak since 2008. I thought I heard for them. And they continue to hit, and they keep coming from behind. I watched some of the post game last night, and Tim Laudner emphasizing that, look, this team is a scrappy team. They've heard some criticisms about the offseason that their club had, and they're here to prove that, hey, we're still here to play, and he really likes how they play all nine.
Well, I think he's half right. These players aren't sitting around saying, boy, let's prove those people wrong and say we should have gotten more talent. Everybody in that clubhouse wished they had one more starting pitcher.
Right.
You know, they have the same opinion we do. Should have got one more starting pitcher, and then he'd be a really good team.
Yep.
He's right about the scrappiness. And, you know, what was so disappointing about the beginning of the season, not necessarily the record or the stats, because, you know, I just don't look at those things early in April. Mm-hmm. It was the quality of the situational at bats was terrible. And what we've seen in this April, we saw, is basically, you know, what we saw last year. Last year they were terrible situational hitters for half a season. Then they called Royce Lewis up and Julianne and Wallner, and they became an excellent offensive team at everything.
Mm-hmm.
First half of April, terrible situational hitting. Some guys didn't look ready or comfortable. Wallner obviously failed. And here we are, second half of April, they start taking better bats in key situations, and everything falls into place. They have a great bullpen. They have good enough starting pitching, and I think Pablo will eventually turn on and be the ace we think he is. It's really the variable is the offensive approach, and the offensive approach during the streak has been excellent. You've seen Buxton and Kepler taking quality at bats at the end of games. You know, guys who hadn't hit before, like Santana and Margot, are starting to contribute. Julianne and Jeffers have been excellent.
Yeah.
They're just two excellent players. Julianne has improved his defense. And those guys are really kind of on their way to being stars, I think.
Julianne has really improved his defense. I was just going to go there as well. You know, I heard that he had really worked hard in the offseason to become more flexible, more athletic at second base. And we're seeing it. He made one play to his backhand last night where he made that little backhand toss then to Correa just in time. You can see his defense has gotten better.
Yes. And, you know, listen, it's almost like an NBA player. You mean you get to the NBA, you get the big contract, you get drafted high because of offensive capability.
Yep.
And then once you're in the league, if you really care about winning, you'll figure out how to play defense too. Well, Julianne got to the big leagues and got himself an everyday job by being an excellent hitter. And then this offseason said, okay, you know, but if I'm going to help this team win, if I'm going to stay on the field, I'm going to have to feel better. So credit to him. He put in the work, and you can tell.
Yeah, no doubt. And then his hitting is just, you know, continues to improve. Like you said, he took some tough at bats early in the year, but he's really started to swing it lately. And Correa came out of the gate from his injured list stint, swinging the bat, and comes up with a couple of big hits already.
Yeah, I thought early in the game, it's almost like you can see him getting the rust off at bat by at bat. Early in the game, I thought he swung through a couple of pitches that he usually just lines someplace. Mm-hmm. And then later in the game, he, like Buxton and Kepler, with the pressure on, really tightened it up and put it together much better at bat. You know, offensive, you know, failure is a big part of hitting in the big leagues.
Mm.
But you want to see the approach be consistently good, especially in tough situations, and that's what we're seeing.
It was a tough off season for the Twins front office. They don't know what their TV revenue deal is, and so they cut back on the payroll. I think it's about 25 or 26 million less than last year. And then the TV deal kind of sunk, and Comcast has dropped Bally's. It's kind of a mess right now in that regard.
It is. And really, let's be honest. This is a poll ad saying we're just not going to take a big loss on this team, so we're not going to risk a huge contract for a pitcher who would replace Sonny Gray. It's the front office, of course. You know, the front office, they want to be good soldiers. They want to be good to the poll ads who employ them and pay them well.
Yeah.
But the front office, this isn't the front office decision. The front office is desperate to win a championship.
Yep.
Joe Pol. What's disappointing here is that Joe Pollad is the guy who, every time I've interviewed him since he took over, has talked about winning championships. And here he is, a team coming off a playoff victory, a team with high-end talent, looks like it's ready to go. And I think, and listen, it's as we talk about all the time, it's a weird thing to try to spend somebody else's money, especially when you don't know how much liquidity they have and all that other stuff. But I would have argued this was the year to go all in, and they didn't.
Yeah, and there was some pitching available. You know, Blake Snell is lighting it up in the National League, and he would have been super expensive, but then Montgomery, who wound up signing a one-year $25 million deal, that is the Twins right back at their same salary level last season. One of those guys would have been good to see.
That was exactly my view. I understood why they didn't give any of those guys $200 million deals.
Yeah.
Pitchers are very risky. They break down all the time. And they can sink you. But both of them, and once they went, basically they both went the Carlos Correa route when he first signed with the Twins and said, okay, instead of getting the huge deal, we're going to get a short-term deal with good money and a lot of flexibility and reassess the free agent market in the future. I thought that's when they should have gone. I will say Snell got off to a terrible start this year.
Ah.
You still want him.
Yeah.
Montgomery's been pretty good, I think. I haven't checked on him lately. But, man, if you think about, and listen, Simeon Woods Richardson is kind of doing the fifth starter job,
yeah.
Keeping them in games. But, man, I think if you added one more good starting pitching arm to this rotation, you'd have a great rotation.
Yep.
And then he would have started the season with Varland in the bullpen, and he would have been dominant instead of just a struggling fifth starter.
Might have been the closer until Duran came back last
right.
night. Yeah. Jim, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Live at 5 Sports at Todd and Suhan, brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort.